This podcast is brought to you by Labyrinth Marketing.
Hello and welcome to The Whole Marketer. Today's podcast is both a technical skill and also an area of personal understanding. It's clarity. And before I welcome today's guest, Ross, onto the podcast, I just want to talk about why I believe it's so important. Clarity is a key skill for us as marketers, both professionally and personally. Professionally, we need to have the ability to provide clear direction of travel on the vision, our strategic choices and goals. We also need to have clarity of expectation for the marketers in our care. Clarity around where we are heading, what our team or function need to do, and also on an individual level, both in their roles and goals. This is imperative to ensure the marketers in our care are motivated, empowered, and clear on what they need to do to achieve. This is not just for the marketers in our care, this is also for ourselves. The clarity about our strengths, what we bring to this world, what we are here to do, and so much more. Today's guest is Ross Farquhar. Ross Farquhar is the marketing director at Little Moons, makers of Moshi ice cream. They are currently taking the UK by storm after sparking a viral TikTok craze in early 2021. Before joining Little Moons, Ross moved from a client to agency and back again, starting at Cadbury's, including the Facebook-driven Return of Whisper, Diageo, working on Captain Morgan, before taking the plunge into the world of startups at Creative Agency 101. After merging the business into Mullen Lowe and a subsequent stint at Grey London, Ross moved back to client-side marketing as CMO of Wagamama's in 2019. There he launched an Anna Epic into cinemas, encouraged Britain to talk with mental health mates, and launched a vegan tuna that made such big waves that Piers Morgan described it as a pathetic lie designed to con the vegan deluded public. Ross was also recently awarded Top 100 Marketers by Marketing Week. And is currently being charged with accelerating the already impressive growth across Europe and introducing Little Moons to the masses. The business is currently over 10 years old, and siblings Howard and Vivian Wong founded the company in 2010, after spotting Moshi ice creams on a trip to Japan and seeing an opportunity to bring it to Europe, building on the craft skills they'd learned from growing up around their parents' Asian bakery business. The first 5 years were largely focused on pleasing the toughest of audience, hospitality, with Little Moons being listed in the likes of Sushi Samba and Nobu. With the confidence in their product that came from the first chapter of the business, retail packs were launched in 2015, and over the following 5 years, Little Moons found their way into Whole Foods, Ocado, Waitrose and Tesco's. Today, Little Moons are the number one Moshi ice cream brand in Europe, listed in all major grocers in the UK, as well as Edeka in Germany and Carrefour in France, to name a few. Ross, welcome to the Whole Marketer podcast.
Thank you for having me. I'm very excited to be here.
Well, I'm excited to have you. As always with the podcast, we always start with a big juicy question up front. And today's big juicy question is a personal passion point for me. What is clarity to you?
It is a big question. I think there's two parts to this. Clarity of thought and clarity of communication. And in my experience, they're both skills that great marketers have, but which are often in quite short supply overall. So if we take each one, clarity of thought to begin with. You know, to start with, I think the marketer's job is really difficult. You have to be able to gather and assimilate lots of different information and data, and then process it into a coherent sort of theory of the case for your brand that's grounded in empirical evidence of what's gone before, both in the business you're in, but also you need to be well-read enough to know what has worked elsewhere. And all of that's really difficult. You know, it requires you to be a real jack of all trades, and you either love that or you don't. And it's really easy to fall down either by not fully interrogating the data enough, the situation fully, and relying too much on your hypotheses, or on the other side, getting completely lost and not synthesizing it down to an output that's both kind of objectively correct and galvanizing for those around you. And those are both, I think, failures of clarity of thought, and it's absolutely critical that the marketer is able to distill down what needs to happen and why, in part for their own benefit, because I just think you really need to have a North Star when you're a marketer to refer back to, because you will get lost in the jungle of tactics and execution otherwise, but also because I think it acts as a solid foundation for ensuring you get to the second part well, which is sort of clarity of communication. You know, I've been a junior marketer trying to execute the strategic intent of the leaders above me, and I've been on the other side of the fence as an agency board trying to produce output that's sort of effective against the strategy that's been handed to me. And the thing I've learned is that honestly, the people who are clear and consistent in their communication of that strategy are worth their weight in gold, because they're the ones who realise that their own effectiveness isn't really just down to them. It's determined by how effective they are at influencing a whole load of people to do stuff, to all move in one direction, to strive to solve the same problem, work within the same parameters. So yeah, put those two together. I think if you don't bring clarity to both your thought process and to how you communicate, you're likely to spend a lot of time herding cats, you know, pushing people to work in the same direction, and your brand's going to be worse off as a result.
I couldn't agree more. And I see so often kind of going into doing training and training either middle to senior management level marketers who either A, haven't got the clarity for their brand, you know, on their strategic choices and the direction of travel and the North Star, as you say, or also in bigger branded businesses where that just hasn't been cascaded down and they're almost there to deliver the in-year plan, as you say, the communications, which should ladder in, or they're there to deliver for their brand or business function or region as part of a wider corporate piece, and they don't know the direction of travel of the wider business. And so all of those things aren't laddering up, and it just creates this lack of motivation, if nothing else.
Well, totally. And you don't get to great outcomes overall for the brand, because the whole thing, you know, ends up looking quite incoherent, I would say. And people are often quite just demotivated, because they're often, particularly in larger organisations, banging their head against the brick wall, trying to convince people to let them do things, not quite understanding that maybe the reason people are saying no to them is the strategic choices haven't been made up front or haven't been communicated well enough. And so it's not their fault, but you're in a sort of malaise as a result of it. So, you know, I just value clarity so highly now, because I see what happens when it's absent.
It's so true. And it's also about being, as you say, constantly laddering back up, but also constant clarity of saying that in every meeting. And I think it was Pete Markey on his podcast was talking about, you know, almost in every meeting, he's laying out the context, you know, reminding people of the direction of travel, reminding people where we're going with the brand or business, reminding people, you know, what the choices are we've made before they get into any discussion around activation or budget or brand or whatever that may be. And it's that consistency, as you say, not just with the individual that's working on the brand, but for the wider business, that allows that to kind of land and be hammered home, I guess.
Absolutely. And, you know, your job as a leader, and I don't mean just your job as a senior person, because this is as true for, you know, people just starting out in their career who want to show leadership, because often the job of the marketer in a wider organization is to be the strategic leader, is to constantly plant a flag and point in that direction over and over and over again in every meeting. And I remember, you know, being a jobbing brand manager at Cadbury and schlepping up to Bourneville once a week to go and do my project meetings on innovation. And the best ones were always the ones where I would start with kind of just reminding why we were all here and what the point was. And the worst ones were when I jumped straight to execution and then found the supply chain team kicking off at me and so on. So it's really, really important, I think, for the marketer to be constantly planting that flag, cascading the strategic choices that the business has made, which you may or may not have been a part of, depending on your role and your level and so on.
That's also a point that we need to emphasise, is that, you know, it's leading regardless of your level. It's providing that clarity regardless of your scope or responsibility, you know, whether that's a project, an innovation launch, a long-term strategy, a campaign, you know, whatever it is that you're leading, having that clarity of why you're doing what you're doing for everyone that's involved is really key. So we're both aligned that clarity is really important. What skills and behaviours do you believe that marketers need to possess to be able to provide that clarity to their teams and in their day-to-day work?
So I think this all starts with insight skills. You know, I was really fortunate to start my career on a graduate scheme at Cadbury, and many of your listeners, I'm sure, will have been on these kind of schemes. You've moved around between sales and marketing roles. And as so often the case, graduates on the team tend to be the analysts, the ones who get, you know, given a whole load of data and told to learn how to analyze it and turn it into, you know, something that is clear and compelling for the rest of the team or the rest of the business. So I got to really understand the kinds of data that salespeople or category development people or brand marketing people look at, and that they need to derive insight that drives action from it. So, you know, I'd first of all say I'd really encourage marketers, particularly in the early years of their career, to roll up their sleeves and get stuck into opportunities like that. Go to all of the focus groups, pull all of the Nielsen data, read all of the brand tracking presentations cover to cover, because those skills will be really invaluable later when it's on you to sort out all these myriad sources into some kind of strategic narrative, often with less time on your hands to do it. And that brings me on to the other behaviour I always sort of encourage marketers to practice, which is writing the narrative. And that narrative could be for your brand strategy, could just be for a presentation you need to write, could be in preparing the briefing you need to give. But being able to go from what you know to what we need to do and to kick the tires on your own logic, really importantly, is a prerequisite for a good outcome and I would argue for a good career. So really practice writing that narrative before you actually sit down and write the thing. You know, think about what your narrative is before you write the brief or before you open PowerPoint. You know, what's implicit in what I'm saying is spend more time getting your thinking straight. When I was agency side, the quality of briefing was, shall we say, extremely variable. And the good ones had clearly just had lots of thought put into them. Someone had really spent time getting their head straight and then they'd crafted the language to communicate it all clearly. And I used to appreciate those briefs so, so much because if I got the opposite of that, someone who hadn't spent a lot of time getting their head straight before they'd put pen to paper, we were going to spend a lot of time, you know, going in circles, just trying to sort of work out what the right answer was, often through work, which is, you know, the worst way of doing it, I would argue.
Yeah, and synthesizing thought. And like you, you know, I see many briefs, whether I'm helping agencies respond to a brief from a client to make sure that it's strategic and the response is really going to allow them to win that pitch, or allowing or supporting client-side marketeers in training to get better at briefing. And you know, if it takes a 20-page deck to explain where you're going, your strategic choices, you know, your annual plan and why you're briefing today, then you haven't got that clarity of thought. You know, it needs to be that opening statement, as you say, the North Star about where you're going and how you're going to get there, that is clear for everyone to understand, and sometimes not in marketing speak.
Absolutely. I mean, I know it's a real cliche, but I always do go back to the idea of the elevator pitch. And someone much wiser than me said to me earlier in my career, you know, you need to imagine you're caught in an elevator with the then MD of Cadbury UK. And what are you going to tell him when he asks what's going on with your brand or what are you doing or what the problem is? You know, you always have to be wandering around with that being held in your head, which means a very shorthand version of everything you've learned, everything you've analysed, down to what we know and why we're now going to go and do what we're going to go and do.
I agree. Synthesising is absolutely key. And I see too many marketers just stopping at the data that they've seen or the fact or the inference that is stating what has happened historically and not enough time actually thinking about the so what and the why that has driven that, nor presenting back into the business the clarity of thought about what they're going to do next. I know that that is such a key skill that all marketers need to possess, but I think not everybody's doing that.
Yeah, totally agree.
So another area in which I believe clarity is key is our personal understanding, the clarity around who we are, what drives us and motivates us, what we value and what our goals are. And as I always say, you can only help others into the extent in which you know yourself. So if you don't know yourself, it's going to be even harder for you to connect and understand consumers' attitudes, beliefs, values and drivers. How would you say your personal understanding has evolved over the years to gain the clarity in this area?
Speaking personally, I think what's happened to me is that in my early years, I was adopting an almost category generic understanding of what my career was going to look like. And ultimately what I was driven by. And I just use that language partly because I'm a marketer. And of course, we talk in those terms. But what I mean by it is, you know, I thought I was going to have this blue chip FMCG career. It's going to be launched from a fantastic grad program. And I was going to make it to the top as quickly and as linearly as I could, because I thought I was really driven by scaling the hierarchy, amassing a big team, and ultimately being financially rewarded for that. Mm. But then over time, I just sort of realized that that wasn't a framework that particularly suited me. And I found a great deal more clarity around what I really enjoyed and when I was at my best. And in many ways, and I'm sort of tenuous link back to the clarity subject of today's podcast, I came to that just by doing more rigorous analysis of an ever-widening pool of data that came from trying more stuff and taking advantage of more tangential opportunities and seeing how that worked out for me. And I have this vivid memory. I at one point was fortunate enough to work for a lady called Margaret Jobling, who's now CMO at NatWest Group. And she was a scientist back in the early part of her career in Unilever, and then she made a leap over to commercial. And when she was telling me about that, my eyes just widened, and I almost couldn't compute the idea that you could make such a tangential and, in a good way, opportunistic move to go, well, what happens if I go and do this? And shall we see if I'm good at it and if I enjoy it? And if I do, then brilliant. That's a new pathway that's opened up. And if I don't, then I'll go and do something else. So as that opened up to me, I started to think a bit more deeply about not just the path that I thought I was on, but what I was good at and what I enjoyed. So I realized I was pretty good at influencing around large organizations, but being honest, it gave me very little joy. And that combined with the fact that I'm a really action-oriented person just meant I was going to be more fulfilled in smaller and more nimble settings. I also realized from feedback that, you know, playing to your strengths, I was pretty good at making the complex simple. And that was a skill that was in much demand among leaders, both client side and actually agency side as well. So that opened up another set of pathways that I hadn't previously considered. And then if there was a light bulb moment, a peak moment of clarity type stuff, I was very fortunate to be selected for the Marketing Academy scholarship in the very first year that it ran many, many years ago. And, you know, the thing the Marketing Academy orients you towards is the long term and really thinking through what you're navigating towards, not just the here and now. And I sort of realized that my career was going to be half a century long. And if I continued at the pace I was going at, and just with this really narrow focus on scaling the hierarchy in front of me as quickly as I could, I was going to burn out, and I was going to come to sort of hate what I did for a living well before the need for me to keep doing it in order to live would cease. So I just sort of gave myself permission to run my own race and take some detours and, you know, stop off when I needed to. And I just found a lot more happiness, honestly, in my professional life as a result of it.
You know, and happiness and fulfillment is absolutely key. The lessons that I'm learning from what you've just shared is that exposure to many different working environments so that you can understand what bits you enjoy and which bits are filling you up also allows you to understand, with that breadth and scope of exposure, your areas of strength. And also what was really interesting is not necessarily if it's your area of strength, it's necessarily going to bring you joy. Just because you're good at something doesn't mean that it's necessarily going to motivate you or fill your soul.
Definitely. I mean, I remember particularly when I was agency side, I got asked to lead a lot of big company business, and I was valued quite highly often by those bigger clients. But it was often for things that I just didn't hugely enjoy doing. It was, I'm a good person to sort of trot out in a board meeting because he'll be able to synthesize things down to a simple and straightforward narrative and get lots of people on board. And don't get me wrong, that is incredibly important as we're talking about it on this podcast. But if I was spending most of my life in those meeting rooms getting people on board, I wasn't going to be doing the action-oriented stuff that I really love doing. So it's all about balance and making sure that you don't just swing in the direction that everyone's telling you you should swing, that you have this kind of core understanding of what gives you fulfillment in your career and you try and navigate towards that wherever you can.
And was there a moment in time when you did the work to get clear on what it is that fulfills you?
To some extent, but I would say that it's always a work in progress. I mean, there have been key moments when I've been forced to stop and think about myself and my professional life and where I'm going. I worked for Cadbury when we were taken over by Kraft, and that was a moment in time where I had to really think about what I wanted next. I ultimately made the decision to leave agency side and come back client side. That was a big moment to think about it. I was made redundant last year from a job that I loved, and that really forced me to stop and think about what am I bringing to the industry and what am I good at and what do I enjoy and what's going to rebuild my confidence a bit. Because although I will tell anyone who's been made redundant that honestly it will open doors and opportunities that you never thought of course it's going to knock your confidence a bit. So I think, as much as I'd love to say there was, you know, this one moment where I really sat down and got it all clear in my head and now I'm just living by that mantra, the reality is you learn something new in every job that you do, and you really do have to take the time when your circumstances change or when an opportunity is put in front of you to really think, what have I learned out of this? And has it changed the picture of how I understand myself?
And it's a great piece of advice. And, you know, as I always say, it's about reconnecting and regrouping at these periods of time. So whether it's a period of time that's been forced upon you, and as you say, in redundancy, or periodically throughout the year, you know, I personally take myself off every quarter and do my own personal review where I look at, you know, how am I doing versus my goals, what in my life, you know, regardless whether work, personal, would I change? And then what am I going to be doing for the next quarter to make sure that I'm kind of regrouping and reconnecting? Because, you know, what once motivated us may not anymore. You know, for me personally, one of my values is growth. So doing a piece of work for the first time, for the second time, for the third time feels like growth. But the second that piece of work feels repetitive or I'm not learning anything new, it no longer motivates to the same degree. So it's about understanding, as you say, that appreciation of what you've learned from each role and what that has taught you about yourself.
Totally right. And again, this comes back to, for me, there is one light bulb moment for me, it's that I'm probably going to be working for 50 years of my life. That's a really long time. So it's unreasonable to expect that I'm going to enjoy the same things for the entirety of 5 decades. I'm going to learn some stuff and enjoy doing it for a while. And then eventually I'm going to want to do something else. You know, I used to absolutely love making telly ads, for example. It used to be the most exciting bit of my job. And now I've made that many of them that, don't get me wrong, there's still a bit of a thrill of doing it. And I'm very privileged to have made quite a lot of them, but it's probably not the part of my job that I get up in the morning really looking forward to and getting excited about, just because I've sort of done it quite a lot. And I think we all need variety and newness in our lives to sort of keep it fresh and keep us engaged.
Completely. And that goes back to kind of human core principles, which is we need a mix of certainty. So things that are stable in our life that we do every day, you know, routines, patterns. And we need uncertainty because that's the variety, you know, that's the spice of life. So if something starts tipping over into the certainty box, then you need something else to give you that variety. And it's having that mix and continuum of the two.
I totally agree with that. And it sort of brings me back to my career path a little bit, because it is one of the ways that I try and navigate around my career to go, am I going to be bringing value to this next role in a way that I'm confident in and that I know I can do? You know, I'm not going to be constantly suffering from imposter syndrome because I'm thinking, gosh, I just don't know what I'm doing and everyone sees right through me. So there has to be a bit of me that goes, yeah, I know how to do this. I've got this. I've done this enough times before. There has to be something new and different about it, or something that's really going to challenge me, or I'm going to have to figure out. Otherwise, I know that I'm not going to last long because I'll get bored. And if I get bored, then my quality of work will probably drop and then it won't be working for anyone. So there's an imperative for us all to really understand, you know, what are the things that we're comfortable with and that are going to keep us confident and secure in our role? And what are the things that are going to be challenging, but just stretch us enough that we stay really, really engaged?
That's a really great piece of advice. You know, enough that we feel that we can deliver and play against our strengths, but also enough that this role is going to give us the scope and breadth to grow into where, give us the scope and breadth to grow and also grow towards where we want to go next. And what I really love about what you're describing is also my personal passion. It's about, what are you giving back to the industry? Mm. You know, what are you doing that's bigger than yourself? What is that ripple effect that you are creating? So that when you look back on your career, and as you say, the 5 decades of your career, you can think, yeah, this is what I contributed. And that for me elevates from the role of here and now to the purpose and legacy you're going to leave behind.
Totally agree. And for me, you know, I've realised, perhaps because I've had quite a varied career, that I am really, really passionate about getting the industry to look at variety in a slightly different way. I think it's a real shame that often people stay in the same industry, sometimes even the same company, for an entire career, and that companies really value that, and they don't necessarily see how transferable a lot of the skills that we're talking about that make you successful in marketing are. So, you know, I definitely feel better and more rounded from having experienced lots of different stuff, and I would absolutely love it if the industry always thought the same way. But when you do find someone who thinks the same way, honestly, it's brilliant, and it's quite a light bulb moment in and of itself, to be honest.
It is, and I couldn't agree more with breadth of experience. You know, in my personal path, it was exactly the same. It was about how many industries, how many different brands, how many different consumers, how many different categories can I experience so I can bring that breadth of knowledge to help more people and grow more brands. And I don't think enough businesses embrace the benefit that breadth of experience brings. Mm. You know, loyalty is important, as is understanding internal businesses, but so is external viewpoints and a wealth of experience to draw on. And on that point, I absolutely love how varied your career is. You know, you've held a mix of roles in FMCG brand management. You've been agency side for Grey and for 101 when we first met. You've worked in leisure retail at Wagamama's. And now you're marketing director for an entrepreneurial brand like Little Moons. You know, what would you say this breadth of role has taught you, and also the common themes when you've been selecting where you go next?
I should say that pretty much none of that variety was planned in a way. I guess it probably couldn't be by definition. I've just been really open to possibilities. And increasingly, I've realised that variety is a thing that keeps me engaged. So I might as well lean into it. You know, we talked about how there's an imperative to make sure there's stuff in every role that you do that you're not quite sure how you're going to do it, and you're going to have to figure it out. That's something that really keeps you leaning in. And as I say, I think it's a shame the industry doesn't encourage more people to pursue that kind of variety, because I'm definitely a more rounded person as a result of it. And I think it's frustrating when people don't appreciate how transferable marketing skills are. I mean, overall, though, and looping back to the topic of our chat today, the biggest thing that having a broader set of experiences has taught me is that if you can think and communicate clearly, there's not a lot that you can't do. And of course, there are some jobs that require specialist skills and knowledge, but successful marketing careers are built on the transferable skills and clarity. That clarity is one of the most important ones that you're going to take with you. So to give you an example, when I joined Wagamama, the fact that I hadn't really worked in hospitality before meant that there were lots of things that I didn't know all of the language goes around the industry and the business, didn't fully understand the P&L and what the drivers were behind it, didn't understand, for example, that in a business that is so driven by a frontline customer experience, the job of the marketer is actually primarily keeping the people on the frontline motivated and engaged, because if a front of house team member isn't on it that day, or a chef isn't feeling it, matter how many beautiful adverts you make, that's going to have a much bigger impact on how consumers feel about you. So there were lots of things that I didn't know. However, I was able to see the wood for the trees as a result of that. And I would argue, form a clearer picture of the job that needed to be doing than I would have if I was a sort of hospitality lifer or someone who'd been promoted from within and had some attachment to what had gone before. Similarly, when I joined Little Moons, I got to bring all of my experience of working with bigger brands to bear on a business that was scaling fast and didn't have that voice in the room. And you absolutely have to have a degree of humility when you go into these situations, because there are going to be lots and lots of people in the room who know more than you and have more experience than you. But it does mean that I'm always looking for roles where I feel like my breadth of experience is going to be valued and that they literally want what I'm bringing into the business. And beyond that, I try and navigate myself to opportunities where I'm getting to exercise a new muscle. You know, I'm trying something new, but with the security of knowing that I definitely have something to add. That's the sweet spot that I look for.
Something new and something to add. I love that. I feel like that's a new marketing career model waiting to happen, Ross. I don't know about you, but the more long-term or brand strategies that I write, the better you get at it. So it's almost that breadth of experience of the challenges that you've had to overcome in different markets, the different strategic choices that you've had to make, that clarity of setting vision, and then how that's going to be brought to life and the clarity around that. It's almost the breadth of experience, but also the quantity of times that you do it, the better you get at it as well.
I definitely do agree with that. I'm with a caveat, and my caveat is, I think one of the best things about having breadth of experience is that it challenges you to go back to the fundamentals and really do the work. And what I mean by that is, if I only had a career in MCG, I know, because, you know, there is a playbook in FMCG, and if you read How Brands Grow and so on, the rules of it are pretty straightforward. It would be really, really easy for me to kind of take shortcuts, particularly in strategy development, you know, insight interrogation, brand planning. And I think when I go into different industries or into different companies where there's something about it that I'm unfamiliar with, my coping mechanism with that is to go, right, I really need to do the work. I need to get all of the data together. I need to really go through it. And I need to get really straight in my head what's going on, why, and therefore what we need to do about it. And I just think that's really good exercise. It's a bit like, you know, forcing yourself to go for a run, even if you don't really want to. It would be easier to just sit on the couch and do what you enjoy. But forcing yourself to really go and do the work by having something in there that you don't fully understand, it is just good practice and good exercise.
I agree. And the perspective that you'll bring as well with fresh eyes.
Mm, totally.
So, Ross, I could talk to you all day long. around clarity on strategy and the direction of travel of the brand and your own personal experiences and making sure you've got that stress point about what you can give and what you can learn, which I think is a great takeaway. But what one piece of advice would you give to marketers of tomorrow?
Take more time writing down your thinking than probably feels comfortable. When you're in your early stages of your career, everything is new. You're being exposed to so much unfamiliar stuff. And the only way to properly absorb it and process it into something useful, in my experience, is to actually commit it to paper and to try and form some kind of theory or hypothesis around it. So if you're in your first assistant brand manager job, write down your diagnosis of the brand situation and the strategic imperatives that you see coming from that. You don't necessarily need to turn it into a presentation or show it to everyone in the business, but the very act of writing it down will force you to get your thinking straight and make you clearer and as a result, more effective. You know, I remember back when I was at Cadbury, I ended up as brand manager for a whole basket of brands that were fairly unloved. And I, for some reason, have this very vivid memory of sitting in a Starbucks at the end of the street I used to live in, surrounded by print-offs of every brand tracking presentation or every strategy document I could find on the shared drive from my predecessors and so on for a brand called Cadbury Boost. And no one had told me that we were ever going to spend any money on Boost or that it was going to be a supported brand or that there was a real need for me to work out what we were going to do with this brand. But I just sort of felt a responsibility that if I was going to be brand manager for Boost, I'd better know what was going on with Boost, what we should do about it. And I definitely feel like maybe the reason that's a vivid memory for me is practicing those skills when the stakes are low, when no one's necessarily shining a spotlight on you and going, please work out what to do here, will stand you in really good stead when you're a more senior person, when you're a leader of a function, when you're making investment decisions and recommendations, and you really need to know how to do that stuff and probably quicker. So if you're starting out, don't get sucked into the, I'm so busy, there's so many emails, I have so much stuff to execute thing. It is all really self-fulfilling. You need to create the time to structure your thinking and it will do you a great service in the long run.
That's a great piece of advice. And thank you so much for your time today.
It's been brilliant. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for tuning in to the Whole Marketeer podcast. If you've enjoyed today's episode, please do click follow below for more weekly podcasts. The Whole Marketer book is now available in all good bookstores. For more information and support on how to have a successful and fulfilling career in marketing, go to www.thewholemarketer.com.